Okay, welcome everybody. Today's topic is really not one topic, but it's I think six, if we get to them all. Six short little topics. I think the title on the post was something like, somebody once told me that, and it's not just old wives' tales, but there was actually a basis in halachim, minhagim, for various things that may seem like old wives' tales, but really are not. Come on, let's see, it's over here. Get my makamos. Okay, we got 2 cents. So we'll talk about a few of these items, and I think the official title is something like Shmiras HaNefesh V'Haguf. That's what it says, at least on the paper, whoever wrote it. And we'll talk about them. First thing I want to talk about is, were you allowed to talk in the bathroom? You ever hear about this? You know, yeah, you're not supposed to die. Okay. Yeah. But these are things like people once said, I once heard, you know. Okay. So, of course, what's the modern day equivalent question of, are you allowed to talk in the bathroom? Are you allowed to text in the bathroom? Okay. So, you're laughing, but Rabbi Katz asked me what I thought about this. It was a few months ago. He said, we got a question from one of the students about whether you're allowed to text while you're in the bathroom. So, it might, but we'll see. This is something to talk about.
Or if they don't know you're in the bathroom and you're talking on
the
phone.
Okay. Well, that's the story. So let's... Okay. We're adults. Let's try to pretend at least we are. Okay. Let's take a look at the first source. Source number one. It's Gemara and Bracha. Amar Rabbi Tanchum Bar Chaniloi. Kol atzanua bebeit hakisei. Anybody who acts in a manner of tzniut, when they're in the Beit HaKisei, literally the house of the seat, obviously he's talking about a bathroom. It's funny, really it should be called a toilet room, but we call it the bathroom, even if there's no bathtub in there. But it was known as the Beit HaKisei. It was the equivalent in the time of Chazal was an outhouse. So anybody that's tanu in the Beit HaKisei needs some shlosha dvarim. So he can be saved from 3 different things which could possibly harm him. Min ha-nechashim, min ha-karavim, min ha-mazikim. From snakes, remember this outhouse is in the middle of, could be in the middle of nowhere. From snakes, from scorpions, and from harmful spirits, mazikim, demons, whatever they may be. V'yesh omim afchal amosav miyushavim alav. And some say you'll even have more pleasant dreams, because the mazikim, who sometimes can frighten him with dreams, so he'll have better dreams. And then the Gemara goes on to say, Ahu beisakise David b'tveria ki abo aile There was a certain outhouse in Tveria that even if 2 people were to come into the bathroom at the same time into this outhouse, normally mazikim, demons, harmful spirits stay away from 2 people. Usually it's only harmful if you're 1. See here, even 2 people would get harmed and they went to this specific outhouse in Tveria. Rabbi Yami and Rabbi Yasi haivu aile bei chad chad l'chude velo mitzikei. Rabbi Yami and Rabbi Yasi would use that same outhouse 1 at a time, and they wouldn't be harmed. Aminu l'Rabbanan, Rabbanan lo mistafisu. Aren't you afraid to use that outhouse? Amru lahu. So they said to the Chachamim who asked them, Anan Kabbalah Gamrinan. Says we have a mesora regarding the bathroom. Kabbalah de beisakise tzniusa vishisikusa. That one should be tsanua in the bathroom and shittikusa. What does lishtot mean?
Quiet.
If you're tsanua in the bathroom and you're quiet in the bathroom, then no harm will befall you. That was the mesorah of Rabbi Yami v'Rabasi. So we see here in the Gemara an idea that one should be quiet when one is in the Beit HaKisei. Rashi on the left hand side. The first Rashi there, Menachoshim, Menachrovim, Menamazikim, he says, Mitoch tzniutad mitnaig benachat ubishtika ena nechoshim margishim lehitkanot bo vafa mazikin chasen olav. He says 2 things. One seems to be more natural, one seems to be more in the supernatural realm. In the natural realm, the more quiet you are, the more placid you are, the less that you might agitate a snake or a scorpion, and they won't harm you. That seems to be more in the natural world. I'm not a big snake person, but I think they say, like, if you make sudden movements, the snake might feel threatened and then come and attack you. So if you're... And it says, Mazikin, these demons and spirits, will leave you alone if you're quiet in your tzanua. Leave you alone if you're quiet in your tzanua in the bathroom. Anyway, this is a Gemara, but in Shulchan Aruch, in source number 2, it's quoted la halacha. The Ramah writes, first it says in the Mechaber writes, Yehei tzanua bebeit takisi v'lo yigal atzma tshiyeshe, talks about how a person should act in a tzanua fashion, shouldn't reveal themselves more than necessary, even when in the bathroom and no one else is there. And then the Ramah writes, Agav, lo yelchu shnei anashim biyachad, two people shouldn't go together. Vegam lo yedaber sham, you shouldn't talk in the Beit HaKiseh. V'yizkar adelet ba'adom yishum tzniut. Then you should close the bathroom door. Okay, some of those things we learned when we were little kids. But you shouldn't talk in the bathroom. That's what the Ramah writes. Now, why shouldn't you talk? Well, we see in the Gemara that shtikusa. But the Kaf HaChayim explains it somewhat more in source number 3. The Kaf HaChayim writes, Ki yesh min sheid. There's a certain demon, Hamachtiyat ha'adamim yidaber sham, that causes a person harm, can cause a person to do aveiros, basically can cause problems to a person if he speaks there. That's one source that he quotes, one idea. And then, if you skip to the fourth line, V'harav solat belulot bet katav, sh'asa ledaber bebeit ha'kisei, kidei shalo latet lahachitzonim makom lehei ocheiz be'inyan hakol v'adibur shalo adam ki kadoshu. I don't understand this. I understand much of what's going on. But what he says is that speech is holy. We know that from the famous Targum Unkelus at the beginning of Brachos, when it says, when another Marishan is created by Yipach Ba'apav, Nishmat Chai Ruach Chayim, so it's Nishmat Chayim Ruach Memalala, right? The power of speech was something that made humans unique in the creation of the world. So speech is something that's holy. And if you speak in the bathroom, then the chitzonim, these outside demon spirits, whatever they are, can, so to speak, attach themselves because they have shlita, they have a sense of power, of control in the Beit HaKiseh, one moment. And in the Beit HaKiseh, they can, so to speak, attack this kedusha, this koach hadibur. And therefore, one should refrain from using the koach hadibur that a person has in the Beit HaKiseh, because that might allow these mazikim to, so to speak, take control or to harm the koach hadibur. So these are the two reasons given given the Kaf HaChayim. One seems to be just if you speak, demons harm you. You have to just be quiet and like hear no evil. You know, don't say anything and they'll leave you alone. And one is because the koach hadibur is so kadosh that using it can cause the koach hachitzonim to take control or to harm it. The Mishnah Brura, just finish off this point, the Mishnah Brura to the left, and Sivkat and Dalid, writes a couple of things. Firstly, he says, lo yadab evim hu litzorech gadol, if it's very necessary, efshad demuta ledabra kozman she'in nifna adayin, aval ba'et she'nifna e'af litzorech gadol asur. In other words, if a person isn't actually relieving themselves at that very moment, then letzorach gadol, you can speak. But while a person's relieving themselves of their bodily wastes, then even letzorach gadol, one shouldn't speak. They do write that there was a custom. The Chachamim made a takana that women were allowed to talk in the bathroom. No, but you have to understand, why did they make such a takana? They didn't necessarily have separate bathrooms for men and for women. It was an outhouse. And it seems that there were many outhouses that weren't necessarily, came with an inside lock. Or as if you ever go to these public bathrooms, all the inside locks are broken. So they allowed women to speak so that a man who is coming to the outhouse and, you know, would think that, you know, either no one's inside or somebody's inside, it's men who are inside. So he would hear that there were women speaking inside, and therefore he would know not to go in. So they made this takana. A woman was allowed to speak as a, I guess it was for women, it was tzniut to speak. So the men wouldn't come in realizing there were women inside. However, it seems to me, I didn't see this discussed, but it seems to me that that idea doesn't necessarily apply in a where you have men and women's bathrooms, or even if you have just one bathroom, but there's a lock on the door, and person can't come in anyway. So that reason they're allowing women to speak seemingly wouldn't apply. Getting back to texting for a moment, if you take a look at the second reason of the Kaf HaChaim, that the Koach HaDibur is so important, what would you say about texting?
It's not really
It's not really using the Koach HaDibur, right? It's using intelligence, but so is reading a magazine using intelligence. Right? So it's not using the Koach HaDibur. So one might say that texting is might be permissible. On the other hand,
it is communication. I mean, what sets us apart is communication, not necessarily talking.
So you want to say that the ability to communicate
is what sets us apart.
But so, reading also is a sense of communication. I'm just on the hearing end. What do I mean by on the hearing end? Somebody wrote something on a piece of paper, and I'm on the receiving end.
But you're actually creating something. If you read it, you're only...
I'm absorbing something that was already created. And therefore,
correct.
You want to say that the Koach HaDibur isn't just Koach HaDibur.
Yeah.
It's anything in which... it's not just only speech. For instance, if a person would use sign language, let's say there's another person in the bathroom, a person would use sign language. So it's not the Koach HaDibur, but that's a means of communicating. And therefore, maybe texting is also a means of communicating. Okay? It's a valid point. I also wonder, in the terms of tzniut, so I think at first glance, tzniut means, to a certain extent, as I said, the person shouldn't reveal themselves in the bathroom more than necessary. But maybe there's also an added thing, that you know, while a person's taking care of their basic bodily needs, to be in communication with somebody, one could argue, may not be something so tzniut. I mean, not that the person necessarily knows where you are, right? You're not just posting. What do people post on Facebook? Everything. Right now I'm in the bathroom and I'm texting to you. No. So, not that people necessarily know where you are, but there may be a certain lack of tzniut in the sense that here I am communicating with somebody else back and forth, having this conversation, and a different aspect of tzniut. There's a certain invasion of privacy. A person, when they're in the bathroom, is really supposed to be a very private matter, and to be communicating with somebody else, so one shouldn't. Okay, there's some questions. Yeah.
What about like schmoozing near the sink of a bathroom, like in a where like many people can go? Because I feel like lots of girls do that.
Okay.
Would that be an issue in terms of tzniut?
So there's a major discussion amongst the poskim over the last, last century or so, when bathrooms were no longer just an outhouse, mm-hmm. but became other things as well. If you've ever had the distinct pleasure of being in an outhouse, and you know that there's basically this hole in the ground, the waste just stays there,
right.
And there's the odor is overwhelming. It's simply just a poskim talk about a ruach ra'a, not only a reach ra'a, but a ruach ra'a that's shalit there. When you have modern day bathrooms, so there are major discussions amongst the poskim. Do all the halachas of a Beit HaKisei apply in that sense? Now, if you're dealing with the bathroom that has two separate areas, in other words, there's an area where the stalls are, and then there's an area where the sinks are, so the area of the sinks would not be considered the Beit HaKisei. The issue would come up, in your bathroom at home, where you have a sink, and you have a toilet, and you have a shower, or a bathtub, or whatever it is, all in one room, and we use the bathroom for things more than just relieving ourselves. Not only relieving ourselves, you take a shower, we wash up, people put on makeup, men shave. There are many things that take place in the bathroom that are not necessarily taking care of bodily needs. And the post can have a big discussion on it. All the halachas quite the same. I would certainly venture to say that while a person is actually using the facilities, that I think the halachas would be the same. But if you walked into the bathroom, the door was open, right? You were just coming to put on makeup or whatever it is in front of the mirror. Would there be the same halachos of not talking? That I'm not so sure. Could be there's room to be lenient. Yeah.
With an outhouse, though, like, it wasn't, like, a mundane thing, right? Like, you had to go out of the outhouse, and, like, it was, right, like, now we have it in our houses, and, like, with a shower and a toilet. It's, like, it's just, it's, I feel like it's just much more of, like, a mundane concept. It's, like, even with texting, like, I guess, like, with speaking, like, our work, like, our words are just much more kadosh, and, like, texting now is, like, so mundane. Like, it, we do it so fast, we do it so often, we do it so quickly that, like, why would texting in the bathroom, like, it's nuanced, like, such a mundane concept.
Well, so you want to argue with what Judith was saying. In other words, you're saying it's not, it's more dibur rather than, let's say it's more dibur rather than communication. I mean, speech is also very mundane. Right. We speak all the time. But we really should be more careful with our speech. That koach
hadibur. Right. But like, even like the whole concept of like...
Let me ask you a question, right? If, okay. You know what a tanis dibur is? Yeah, sometimes people, like, they want to accept upon the Tana Dibur. Would that apply to texting?
Yeah.
The person took upon themselves the Tana Dibur.
Well, can you write?
That's interesting. I think people do a Tana Dibur. They write if it's necessary.
Right. So same, I think that would be as texting.
Yeah, on the other hand, people usually write, they only write if it's really necessary. To sit there all day long, people don't start writing all sorts of things. My point is that we do view texting as a, for better or for worse, it's becoming, it's in some places, it's almost replacing speech. You know, the joke, it's not so much a joke, two people sitting next to each other, texting each other, not communicating. So, I'm not, I don't know, I can see either way with texting, but... not that I can prove this, but while a person's actually relieving themselves, I don't know, it bothers me. I think there's a certain lack of tzniut involved.
And hygiene.
Maybe hygiene as well. Okay. Yeah.
So if you're talking to somebody and you know that they're in the washroom, on the other side of the door, like, on the foot, whatever it is, so, like, would that be a leaf-neat-eager case if you continue to speak to them knowing that, or is it just like, okay, so they're doing what they want, it's their choice?
Well, to a certain extent, if you're asking them all sorts of questions while they're relieving themselves, there is a lifnei'iver aspect. Mm-hmm. I mean, the poskim here, the Mishnah Berurah talks about it, that they talk about that if a person's knocking on the door, is anybody in there? They literally talk about grunting, you know, you know, something like that. Or somebody's looking for you and you want them to know that you're there. Bang on the door or you make a sound. Right. But you shouldn't really say, "Hey, I'm in the bathroom." Okay. Yeah.
So I just missed something. Are you allowed to speak if you're in the bathroom, but not like actually going to the bathroom? Like if you're in the shower, like people sing in the shower, like things like that. Are you allowed to?
So, you're not in the bathroom to relieve yourself. You're in the bathroom to. So that I didn't come to any clear cut answer consensus about this. There is more room to be made in our modern day bathrooms because there is they're used for so many other things.
Oh, so that was the
right.
Okay.
One could argue that singing where people outside the bathroom can hear you singing while you're showering, one could argue is a little bit of a lack of its tzniut of sorts. Yeah.
Just the two people coming into the bathroom. The only thing that we said that was okay or not okay. I'm just thinking in terms of like a child, like
you. The poskim talk specifically with a child. Poskim say that it's allowed, and they also talk about that women used to. Where is it? They talk about mashmak tzat and nichnasa gan kim b'shtayim. The Mishnah Berurah ends up by saying that it seems that women used to go in pairs to the bathroom. Minhag that seems to stand till this very day. It really has it really has ramifications in Hilchos Yichud. And if you learn a little bit of Hilchos Yichud, the halacha is that that if you're if you have three, right, two women and one man is an Isser Yichud, but three women and a man is not Isser Yichud. But if you're walking out in the fields or whatever it is, then you can't rely on three women and one man. Why? Because we're worried that one of the women will go to the bathroom And if one of the women, this is what Pascal say, one of the women goes to the bathroom, so what's going to happen? Somebody else is going to go with her. So there'll be, so two women will be going, and they'll only be left with one. So, anyway, they do talk about the fact that women would go to the bathroom. Again, things are a little bit different. It's if you're dealing with a bathroom that has separate stalls, so it's really separate bathrooms. But if you're dealing with a bathroom that has only one toilet seat and one woman wants to go to the bathroom just to have company in the bathroom, they talk about that they would be allowed, but I think it was more for sinuit purposes because when the bathroom's out in the middle of nowhere, women didn't want to go off alone. Yeah.
I feel like one of these questions about the extended bathroom also come down to what are these evil spirits and where are their territories exactly, and like, are they only there when you're actually in the bathroom?
No, there were definitely ruchot that were there in the outhouse. Whether they're there nowadays, this is what the post can discuss, and it's very hard to come to an absolute conclusion. It's not something that we can see, that we can measure. So you have to try to interpret Chazal in the light of changes in modern technology. There are many halachas, strict halachas about things that are permissible and not permissible, about thinking divrei Torah and talking divrei Torah, and what are you allowed to thinking divrei Torah, and what about modern day bathrooms, etc. Okay, let's go on to the next topic, because I would like to cover at least more than one. All right. There's a Sefer Chasidim in source number 4. I don't know if you ever heard of this custom. It says, "V'lo yasa adam tztaka b'davar sheyesh bo sakana." A person should not do charity if it involves a degree of sakana. La'echad nitnu lo min alayim shel meit. A person died and somebody gave him the shoes of a dead person. V'ratza latet otam la'ani. And he wanted to give them away to a poor person. Person didn't have shoes, he would give away. Okay, person died, doesn't need his shoes anymore, give him the shoes. They said to him, no, you can't do that. And the tinkerim lenachri, sell him to a non-Jew. And then the money you can give to tzedakah, shelo yavali de sakana shum yehudi v'yitein amot la'ani. Because if you give the shoes of a dead person to somebody, it's sakana. I don't know if you ever heard this, that you know, a person passes away, so they'll give away all the clothing, like, you know, that person passes away, they'll give away the clothing to like a tzedakah fund, the Salvation Army, I don't know, whatever it is. But you don't give away shoes. Never heard this?
No.
Okay, so now you heard it. There's this idea that the shoes of a dead person, you don't give away. You don't wear. What do you do with the shoes of a dead person? Throw them out. And it's based on the Sefer Chasidim, because there's sakana for the shoes of a dead person. The question is, what's the sakana about? So Moshe Feinstein, in the Igros Moshe, to the left, says it's not what people might think it is. Or maybe it is what people think it is. Depends on your perspective. In source number 5, he says, L'chein asar lilbosh gam min alayim shel adam shemeit, d'shem ha-meit mimachala mitdabeket. We're worried that the person died of some sort of contagious disease. And what might happen? Right, that whatever disease that was, there may be bacteria or something or another that's in the shoes, person won't pay attention to, and he wears the shoes of the dead person, he may catch the disease that killed the other person. Continues in Moshe Feinstein, V'av shelo shchicha shelo yadu shahaya chola b'machala mitabeket, mikoma koma yashlachush l'sakana gam l'dava shelo matzik. Even though it's not so common that a person will die of a contagious disease and people won't know, nevertheless, we should be concerned about it. Aval im keinu davka b'lo yadu mima meit, div yadu shemeit mimachala shelo mitabeket ein lachush. He says, but that only applies if you're not sure why the person died. If you know the person died and not because of any kind of contagious disease, then there's no problem in wearing the shoes of a dead person. It's only when either you know for sure he died of contagious disease or you don't know why he died. Maybe he died of some disease that's contagious. Rav Avadya Yosef in source number 6 takes it a little bit further. He says, Mikomakom yeshmakom adayin lomar, Shlo Hechmir Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, the author of the Sefer Chasidim, Maybe he's only talking about if he was wearing the shoes when he died. These were shoes worn when he was sick, and he died from that sickness. But without this, you don't have to be concerned about. So if you know that the person didn't die from a contagious disease, or, right, then Rav Moshe Feinstein allows it. Rav Yosef quotes two opinions, two ideas. Either one, you can't wear shoes only if he died while he was wearing the shoes, or maybe he wore the shoes when he was sick. But both of them understand Rav Yehuda HaChassid and Sefer Chassidim as not being some sort of heegee-beegee, mystical, who knows what, the person died, don't wear shoes because the demons are there. But rather that you're worried about contagious diseases and only under those concerns. Now, of course, if that's what you're worried about, so what logical question should you ask?
How can you sell it to a non-Jew?
Well, forget about that question. What? What about all the other articles of clothing? The whole custom is only about shoes. Why does Rabbi Yehuda Chassid mention only shoes? Why doesn't it? Shirts, pants, skirts, dresses, everything. Now, anything can be... So that's not so clear to me why they talked about dafka shoes if what you're concerned about is the contagious disease, yeah?
I think it makes sense because you can wash clothing, but you can't wash like leather shoes as easily as you can wash
shoes. Oh, so maybe there's an answer.
Like there's like gross things in shoes. Shoes are just gross. Mm-hmm. Or than other things.
So maybe you'll say that obviously a person gets clothing, an article of clothing, they'll launder it, they'll dry clean it, and that will kill the germs with shoes. You're right, you don't wash shoes. Okay, so maybe that's the reason.
Then why can you sell it to non-Jews? If you're saying that it's something like germs, then you can kill them as well. It's not like an evil spirit that's only going to be in a Jew.
So the what seems to be for Moshe's tshuva is that we're not... The case where a person was known to die from a contagious disease, a person had leprosy, real leprosy. So then you wouldn't give it away. It's only, we don't know why the person died. And we have this, there's an outside chance, maybe he died from some disease that's contagious, we don't know about. But chances are that it wasn't. So for Jews, we're going to be extra machmir, and we're not going to use it. Because there's a 1% chance that maybe there's sakan involved. So we're extra, extra machmir when it comes to Jews. But by the non-Jews, 99% chance that there's nothing wrong, so you don't have to be concerned about it. We lie in the room. There is one other possibility involved in this. I saw quote in another sefer. There's a Gemara in Brachos that towards the end of the Gemara in Brachos, they talk a lot about dreams. If you have a dream about this and a dream about that, it tells all sorts of incidents that you may come and dream and what it might mean. The Gemara there talks about that if you have a dream where a dead person comes and takes the shoes out of your house, it's a bad sign. It's a bad sign. What's the bad sign? Because if you take the shoes out of the house, it's a sign you're going on a journey. And if it's a dead person taking the shoes out of the house, you're going on what kind of journey? You're joining him. That's a bad sign. That's what the Gemara says. So, some suggest that maybe you shouldn't wear the shoes of a dead person because you may make associations. We know that very often the dreams that you have at night have to do with certain things that happen during the daytime. Very often warped and convoluted. It doesn't exactly the same thing, but you were dreaming that something happened during the day and at night it turned into some dream. So if you wear the shoes that you associate with somebody who died, you might end up having one of these kinds of dreams that they're like the dead person coming to take his shoes back. And it'll take him out of your house, which is a siman ra. And therefore, that might be the reason why you shouldn't take shoes, and dafka shoes, and has nothing to do with contagious diseases, but because you might end up having a dream about a dead person taking the shoes away, and that's a siman ra, that's not a good chalom, so therefore you shouldn't wear the shoes of a dead person. I think, by the way, although you may have never heard it, but you'll ask around, you'll see that sometimes people, they'll give away clothing, but with shoes, they tend not to give away.
Which number is that?
The last piece I said, that's not here. Oh. I saw it in another saving.
In general, people don't
I don't think people give away. I think there's this thing about...
Alive,
No, no, no. Give away shoes of a person who died.
Because what about what if a person dies later? And then somebody else has
a shoe? No, but they're not. First of all, if you're worried about contagious diseases, we don't make an assumption. And if you're worried about this, it's not the shoes of a dead person. I mean, the person eventually died, but you're not associating. You take the shoes of the dead person. Mm-hmm. You might think, like, oh, he's going to come take him back away from mm-hmm. Okay, that's what she's. Third issue. Some students asked me how long ago? A couple of weeks ago. There's a custom. Well, let's read source number 7. Yesh noagim she'ein lomdim Torah b'leil nitl ad chatzos.
My dad said this, and I was like, what the heck are you talking about?
Okay.
I was just like, it's not a thing.
Some have a custom not to learn Torah on Christmas Eve.
It's a Hasidic thing, right?
They're, by Hasidim, they're very machpid. Hasidim are very machpid about this. So they don't learn Torah on Christmas Eve. It's called Nitl Nach. Why it's called Nitl is a whole big discussion of where the term comes from. But I need a Latin expert. Birth? How do you say birth? Like a woman who's pregnant takes prenatal vitamins, right? So natal is has to do a little bit with birth. I don't know the exact Latin term. So Nitl might be some corruption of the Latin word, which means birth, because according to Christian belief, although it's probably not true, but according to Christian belief, that December 25th is when Jesus was born, and therefore it was called the Nitl, and that night of was called Leil Nitl. So some have a custom not to learn Torah, and he quotes it until Chatzot, until midnight. Now, where is this custom from? So in the long footnote here, he quotes two different possibilities, one of which I remember hearing years ago, and one I thought was very fascinating. One of the standard explanations given is very simple. It was dangerous to go out on Christmas Eve for Jews. The Goyim are getting all riled up, and for a Jew to be working out, especially at night on Christmas Eve, was not a good idea. And therefore, what did they tell all the Talmidim and all the people? Good Talmidim and good Balei Batim, where would they go at night? To Beis Medrash, to learn. So what did they say? On Nitl Nacht, right? On Christmas Eve, don't go to the Beis Medrash. Why should you go to Beis Medrash? It's dangerous to leave your house. People should stay home. So from there, what minhag got corrupted? Oh, if you can't go to the Beis Medrash, what does it mean? Oh, it must mean you can't learn. So that's one explanation given. But that's really a corruption of a minhag that was just very practical advice. But in this footnote here, he quotes from the Chassam Sofer, and that, by the way, doesn't really explain why only until midnight. But he quotes from the Chassam Sofer a fascinating insight into the custom. It says like this. Many religious Christians will celebrate Christmas Eve, they'll go to church. And when's the height of their Christmas Eve celebrations?
Midnight Mass.
Midnight Mass. What they call Midnight Mass in the church. So what happens? They take a look. Here it is, the night of December 25th. And where are all the Goyim? Not all the Goyim, but the Christians. Where are all the Goyim? They're in the church! And they're doing their worship. And where are all the Jews? Midnight. Where are they? Fast asleep in bed. Doesn't look good for us. It looks bad. They're in their churches worshiping, and we went to schlaf. We went to sleep on. So what did they do? They said as follows: you can't learn Christmas Eve until midnight. So what do all good Jews do? They say like this, I have to learn, but I'm not allowed to learn until midnight. So what am I going to do? Oh, I'll flip it. What did they do first? They went to sleep. When did they wake up? At midnight they woke up, because how can you give up a night of learning? We're going to give up a night of learning, chas v'shalom. So then all the Jews would get up, and at midnight they'd be learning. So in Shemayim, what do? They take a look, all the Christians are in church, and Baruch Hashem, the Jews are sitting and they're learning. Gewaldig. So that's why they said you can't learn until Chatzos. I come along and say, instead of saying that, why did they say everybody should be learning after Chatzos, like Shavuos night, should learn all night long. But if we say you learn Shavuos all night long, what does that tell you about Shavuos? Oh, Shavuos is a holy day. If they were to announce on the night of the December 25th, everybody should be learning all night long, what would that mean? That December 25th is a holy day, Chas v'Shalom. So instead, they did it in a backhanded fashion. They just said you can't learn until midnight. So, okay, people who want to learn, they must meet them, they'll go to sleep, they'll wake up at midnight, and then they'll sit and learn. And this way, that will counterbalance the, in Shamayim, where you see where they see all the Christians are in church, and Baruch Hashem, the Jews are in the Beis Medrash, are sitting at home, and they're learning. So that was the insight of the Chassam Sofer, which I thought was a fascinating insight. Yeah.
But I feel like God doesn't need that. Like, what is that? Like,
No, Hashem doesn't need it. We need that. We don't want what's called the kitrud. We don't want the satans coming along and saying, look what's going on. The satans start prosecuting us. Saying, here, yeah, the Christians are up after midnight and they're in their churches. Right? The rest of the year, maybe they're in the taverns getting drunk. I don't know if I should say that. It's probably politically incorrect. But but here, they're in the churches and they're worshiping. And then the Jews are all sitting and lying in bed, sleeping, fast asleep.
But there's always Jews learning around the world.
Right, but we need to counteract. I mean, I assume that there's some Christians also who are doing nice things after midnight. Maybe. But we want to counteract that in greater proportions. So we say, don't learn until Chatzos. Okay. This is not a universal custom, but amongst Hasidim, it's taken sometimes very seriously. I mean, to such an extent, they would play cards, Chas v'Shalom, to do anything that's learning. There are all sorts of other explanations given. I just, the cloud, don't understand them. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, because my dad was saying something about, the learning is going to give, schar to his soul and whatever. And I was like, I don't even know what you're saying.
There are sources that talk like this. I don't know what they're saying either, but they're also. I don't know how this works. Okay, yeah.
Just for the first source, also nowadays, not many people go out to learn to make midrash. A lot of people could learn at home or have studies in their house. That's also different.
So I think there was a corruption of the minhag. I think that the minhag was don't go outside, which made a lot of sense. I don't know why. I guess I was wondering why on Easter there was no custom, but they probably don't do anything at night on Easter. Probably Easter is during the day. So, but on Christmas it was at night. So, and maybe also there was more of a chance of drunkenness. Because Christmas is more celebratory. Easter is much more serious. So, it was more dangerous to go out than Christmas Eve. So they said, don't go to Beis Medrash. If it got corrupted, that you shouldn't learn. Mm-hmm. I read somewhere, I heard somewhere, and the stipler, they asked the stipler about the minhag. He said, no one should tell him when it's December 25th. He had no clue of the Christian calendar. He said, he doesn't want to know about it. Why? Because there were those who had a custom not to learn. He held that if you don't know that it's December 25th, you don't have to worry about it. So he said, no one should tell him when it is, so he could certainly learn. Okay. Fourth issue. Fingernails. I know fingernails were so funny. Okay. Are you guys okay? Is it stuffy in here? It's perfect. Okay. Source number 8. The Rama writes as follows. Ukshenotel Tziparnov. He's talking about getting ready for Shabbos. Source number 8. Lo yitol otan kesidron. You shouldn't cut them in order. V'yatchil, but you should do it in out of order. V'yatchil b'smol. Start on your left hand, bikmitza. The fourth finger is called the kmitza. Ubiyam in be'etzba. And then your right hand with the etzba. That's the second finger. If you count, the thumb is number 1. So the kmitza is number 4 and the etzba is number 2.
4 from the thumb?
Yeah. Thumb being number 1. The siman lazeh. Dalet bet hey gimel aleph bismolo. Ubet dalet aleph gimel hey biyamin. So it would be like this. The left hand. 4, 2, 5, 3, 1. 4, 2, 5, 3, 1 on the left. And on the right side, 2, 4, 1, 3, 5. So that's what the Rama writes. Doesn't explain why. But there seems to be some sort of what we would call Kabbalistic reasons why you shouldn't cut your fingernails in order. Comes along the Mishnah Brura, and he writes, right below source 8, B'tashbeitz katov she'amaram lo digdeg bezeh, the Maran didn't care what order you cut your nails in, he didn't say you had to do them out of order. V'chein katvu al ha'ari, and they also wrote that the Ari, who is the master Kabbalist, right? He also didn't say you had to cut them in this unusual order. Not only that, but the Aruch HaShulchan in source number 9 says the Ari used to make fun of people who cut them in this strange order. Just make fun of them. Nevertheless, the Mishnah Berurah writes, Mikom Mekom Yesh Li Hizaher L'Chatchila. It's best to be careful about this, L'Chatchila. The Aruch HaShulchan, when he quotes this custom, in source number 9, it's a little bit higher up to the left. He says, "V'gam katvu kshkanotot tzipanav leitotam kesidron v'yatcho b'smol b'kmitzu b'yom b'batzba v'simu lezed al beitei gimel l'smol etc. V'katvu shariza lo hikped al zev v'hayamalig al zev made fun of it. V'kom mekom kedai li zeh l'chatchil." It's best, says the Magen Avram, to be careful about this. And then the Aruch HaShulchan writes, "V'chol elu advarim ein lahem shum makom badin." This is not a halacha. U'man de kapid kapid u'de lo kapid lo kapid. If you want to be careful about it, be careful about it. If you don't want to be careful about it, don't be careful about it.
Why would you be careful about it? There's no reason.
Well, to say that there's no reason is a little bit too much. There are sources that talk about it. The question is whether these sources are binding. So strictly halachically speaking, they're not binding. Even as an Eitzah Tova, some say it's best to be careful. And others say, no, if you want to be careful, okay. There's some things that if you think that there's importance to it, then there is importance to it. And if you don't think there's importance to it, then there is no importance to it. And the importance is based on how much chashivut you give it. So, at the end of the day, there are people who cut their fingernails out of order. Please don't cut your fingers. Cut your fingernails out of order, like this. And then those who are not much good about it. And it doesn't seem that if you, you know, if you treat it, okay. If you give it importance, it has importance. If you don't, it doesn't.
Is it best to be consistent?
It would seem, for at least the language of the Aruch HaShulchan, that if you're always very careful about this, then you should be careful about it. Yeah.
Would this rule apply for when you file your nails?
Probably. I don't think when you clean your nails, if you're just cleaning dirt from underneath the fingernails, but filing is in a certain way of removing some of the nail. Yeah.
So I thought all of these sort of reasons, including going back to the shoes, it's all like Kabbalistically to do with like death and the idea that we don't imitate like when people are caring or you know caring for the dead or tending to them before burial. You know, they cut their nails in order and, you know, their feet are facing the door and things
right.
like that. And therefore, we cut our nails outside of, like, not in order, and then we rinse our nails and things like that. It's all superstitious.
Well, I don't know if I would word... There's something what you're saying. I don't know if I would use the term superstitious. Superstition has a bad name. Because right? What does superstition imply? That people think that a certain action will bring about bad things... And it's a bunch of malarkey. It's just silliness. But there are other things that, you know, it's not necessarily pure silliness. There may be reasons why we don't want to imitate the way things are done with the dead. One more thing about fingernails, which you... By the way, did you know about this cutting out of order? Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I still want to get the order.
What?
I tried to draw a hand, like, on the fingers, like, but I missed it.
It's right. You just it's an order there to just take the letters 4, 2, 5, 3, 1.
Where is it? That one?
Yeah, it's count from the thumb is 1.
Okay.
So it's 4, 2, 5, 3, 1, and then in the right hand it's 2, 4, 1, 3, 5. By the way, I think there are sources that talk about that as long as you don't do it in order, it's okay. It doesn't have to be dafka this out of order. It could be some other out of order kind of thing. There's one other halacha regarding fingernails. That's Gemara in Nidan, the source number 10, that says as follows. Anotot tziparna v'zark on Rishut HaRabim. A person takes their fingernails and throws them into Rishut HaRabim, so he's considered a Rasha. So the Gemara says he's considered a Rasha. Why is he considered a Rasha? Because it can cause a pregnant woman to miscarry. You ever hear this? This is a real Gemara. It's a real Gemara. That, and therefore, the Gemara Nida says that the second bracket in source 10, Tana Rabbana Gimel Dvaram Nemru B'tziparnayim, Sarfan Chasa, the best thing is to burn them. Kovran Tzadik, the second best thing is to bury them. Vizarkan Rasha, but you throw them into the, where people walk by, so that's a Rasha. Nowadays, there's another solution to burial or burning them. What could you do? If you flush it down the toilet or down the sink, if you cut your fingernails over the sink and it just goes down the drain, so that will also remove them from the public realm and no one will come across them. Now, how exactly does this work? Why it causes women to miscarry? I don't know. But let's understand something. Modern science is quite aware that women who are pregnant are very susceptible to harm in things that otherwise are not considered harmful at all. For instance, x-rays. You all know, hopefully you all know, a person goes for x-rays all the time. Pregnant women, like, stay away from an x-ray rule. Why? Because an x-ray which might be perfectly harmless to a person can be extremely harmful to a fetus. They talk about all these warnings about pregnant women, you know, you shouldn't drink any alcohol at all, and various medications that, you know, otherwise non-pregnant people take all the time. If you're pregnant, you got to ask the doctor because you don't know how it can affect it. So in the realm of the physical world, we know that pregnant women are highly susceptible to things that otherwise are not a problem. Why should that not be the same? Why shouldn't it be the same in the spiritual realm? A fingernail is a kind of dead part of the body, right? Separated from the body, it's dead. It's not growing anymore, and it's just lying there. So maybe in the realm of the spiritual world, there's a ruachra, there are shadim, there's something there that if a pregnant woman comes into contact, can be harmful. It doesn't mean it always is going to happen. Just like it doesn't mean that if a pregnant woman takes one glass of wine that something chas v'shalom is going to happen to the baby. It doesn't mean it always will happen. But a woman is, pregnant woman is highly susceptible and she should be extra careful when it comes to these things. And therefore, everybody else has to be careful not to leave their fingernails lying around because you never know. So you just flush it down the toilet. Aside from, Hannah would tell us it's good hygiene to get rid of it also. Not leave it lying around on the counter in the sink counter in the bathroom, but one should clean it up and flush it out. And the best thing would be flush it down the toilet, down the sink, not leaving it in the garbage can. That would seem to be not the best thing to do. That's a way to be careful. Yeah.
Okay, two questions. First of all, it's interesting because when I always wonder this in terms of what nail salon is pregnant. The nails on, they're totally not mopped. Everything's all over the place. So, like, and especially during that period of time, people generally, women who are pregnant tend to actually go more often than usual to the nail salon. So, it was just, that's a question I had.
I don't know, I haven't been in a nail salon in a while.
Like, is it something that we should be careful about? I was actually thinking,
yeah, should we not go there? But it's prevention, it's on the side. We're not saying women shouldn't go outside because there might be a fingernail. Or a
no, but it's saying pregnant women, it could be, if there's chash of...
It's an implication of it.
I would think so. I mean, let me ask you another question first. What does a pregnant woman do who wants to cut her nails? So, like, that she has to do it, like, you know, in one shot, right over the...
Yeah, what if she steps on her own fingernail?
Right, I'm saying, you know, she's cutting her nails, so that's it, and then she wants to throw it down. So, I would assume that regarding her own nails, at least for a period of time, I don't know if you leave it there for a long period of time, but over a period of time, I don't think that a short period of time, I don't think there's a problem. I never saw anywhere that a pregnant woman can't cut her own nails.
What's the difference between a pregnant woman cutting her own nails?
No, I'm just saying. So I think that there's a certain, her own nails, I think, is not necessarily a problem. But it seems to me a nail salon could be a problem for a pregnant woman.
Because a lot of pregnant women can't reach their toes, like, at some point. So they go, people, I'm serious, like, you go and they cut your toenails for you. Like, it's not like people do that. Like,
no, I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember what the poskim talk about, that it's toenails or, it's only fingernails. I don't remember. I'd have to check it up, but it's the plaster toenails are only or only fingernails. I understand.
But to what extent do you have to be careful with this? Like, if I, like, I just have had this question 100 times over, because if I'm cutting my child's nails, right, and I'm, like, trying, I can't bring them to the bathroom next to the toilet to, like, or they're going to slip while they're playing with, like, 6 toys to distract them, like, how do you, like...
No, I assume there isn't the pile of your kid's fingernails lying in your living room from the last...
No, I tried, like, if I'm in the room and then one flies, I'm like, oh, I can't leave you to go grab that and, like, put it in the toilet.
But eventually, you do fill them out soon afterwards, no?
Yeah, I'm saying some, but if it clips off somewhere, like, they're very, very small, it's right here, to, like, keep track of every single thing that it's, like...
So, lo nid na toro le malachei hashareis. And therefore, what you can see, right, what you should get rid of. I don't think it has to be instantaneous, but it shouldn't be left lying around. It could also be that left lying around, maybe nails tend to attract whatever is harmful in the spiritual realm to pregnant women.
And it wouldn't be Zilkan. It would just be like you forgot them, but not you threw them out.
Right? Well, because they're talking about people would throw them out with a rabbin walk.
Yeah, but that's like an active... You're doing something.
And right,
like,
you didn't just...
You're doing it on purpose, and then you're a Russia, but...
And you don't have to take yourself to crazy expense to make sure it's have somebody else there.
I don't think you have to do bedikas chametz after the nails. You're sitting there with your candle and the wooden spoon.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Wait, so what's the answer for the nails?
I don't know. The first I heard the question, offhand, I would say it's something to be concerned about. I can see it. I don't believe it. I'll take a look to see what Poskim say. Yeah.
I had a teacher one year who said whenever she was pregnant, she like didn't go to get manicures or step into any of those kind of stores.
Uh-huh. Okay. The hour is getting late, and there are two more issues that maybe we'll just do them very, very briefly. Although nothing ever gets done very briefly. One is halacha regarding the Gemara in Pesachim says in source number 14 that... Did I skip something? Yes, I did skip. Where did I want to go? I wanted to go to source number 11. Back to source number 11. On the top of the page. Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Chamisha Dvarim Hein Sha'osel San Mitchai B'Nafsha V'Damba B'Rosha Ochel Shum Kolov U'Batzel Kolov U'Beitza Klufa Sha'avar Le'en Alayla. That one is not, should not eat a garlic that was peeled, or an onion that was peeled, or an egg that was peeled and left overnight unpeeled.
Oh, yeah.
One should not eat them because it's dangerous. This is what the Gemara says in the name of Shimon bar Yochai. So if you peel an onion, you peel a garlic, or you peel an egg, and you leave it overnight, so you shouldn't eat it. That's what the Gemara says. What's interesting, very quickly, is that this din in the Gemara is not quoted by the Yush. It's in the Bavli. It's not quoted by Yushami. It's not quoted by the Rambam. It's not quoted by the Torah. It's not quoted by the Shulchan Aruch. The standard poskim don't bring this din at all. The standard Rishonim and the earliest of Achronim don't bring this din at all. And therefore, there are those who say that we don't paskin like Rav Shimon ben Yochai. And he said that, but we don't paskin that way. However, other poskim are more machmir. Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuva Digris Moshe, the Chafetz Chaim is quoted that it's best to be machmir. So you definitely have two different distinct opinions. There are poskim who say one doesn't have to be machmir about this because it's not quoted by the classic earlier poskim. And there are other poskim would say, no, one should be careful about this and not eat an onion that was peeled, if it was left overnight, an egg, etc. One of the things you can do, there are a number of possibilities to solve the problem. One is, if, let's say, with an onion or a garlic, if you left a little bit of the peel on, then that's okay. So if you're ever peeling an onion, don't take off the entire peel, leave a little bit of peel on, and that would be okay. If the egg or the onions, if they're mixed in together with a salad, that's also okay. If you salt them before you leave them overnight, We put some oil on them. That's also considered okay. So the number of possibilities of things that you can do. But again, there are poskim who say you have to be, well, you should be concerned about this. Another poskim who say that you don't have to be concerned. But even if you're concerned, do one of these three things. Leave a little bit of a peel, mix it in a salad, or put some salt or oil on it. Okay, that was one thing. The last halacha, jumping ahead, is the Gemara in Pesachim, that talks about Tanis, source 14, Ochlu Ramashkin Tachas Amita, Afinu Mechubim Bekli Bazel Ruach Rashor Aleihem. That if you have food that's kept under your bed, anybody who's been in camp will say, what are you talking about? We do it all the time, let alone in the dormitory. Right? Food that's kept under your bed, even if it's covered with a metal kli, Ruach Ra'a is on them and you shouldn't eat them. Right? You have to be careful about this. So this is the Gemara, and it's a Gemara. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch in source number 15. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that many people aren't careful about this nowadays. We're just not makpid. But most Achronim say that l'chadchila a person should be careful and not keep food underneath their bed. There are a number of things to keep in mind. Number one is, number of Achronim write that it's only a problem when you're sleeping. If you're not sleeping on your bed, it's not a problem. Secondly, poskim say it's only a problem if you're sleeping at night. If you happen to take a nap during the day, it's also not a problem. So what you can do in camp is, during the day, it can be kept under the bed. When you go to sleep at night, if you just push it out from underneath the bed, then it would be okay. Other possible leniencies are the fact that there are some achronim who write that even though the Gemara says even if it's covered by metal, it's not good enough, but if it's mamish sealed, it's totally wrapped and totally sealed, not just like I took a metal pot and covered it, but it's totally sealed in something, then that might be okay. Not all posts can agree with that, but that's a leniency. Bidyeved, there's a big machlok at poskim. There's some poskim who say that bidyeved, you can't eat it. If it's done, you have to throw it out. On the other hand, there are achronim who write that if it's going to be a big hefsay, the bidyeved, you can eat it. And there are other achronim who say, even if it's not such a big hefsay, that this whole gemara is only talking l'chadchila, but bidyeved, if you happen to be under the bed, then you don't have to throw it out, and you can go ahead and eat it. Lemaisa, it seems that most poskim will tell you should l'chadchila be careful about it, and you shouldn't keep food under your bed when you're sleeping at night. That would be the best thing to do. Just push it off, right, from a little bit underneath your bed, from not underneath your bed. Bidyeved, there are those, especially if there's a lot of food involved, bidyeved is there's much to rely on and not have to throw it out. Okay, we'll stop here.